and welcome to a Tale of Sales podcast. This is Chris's Corner. I am your host, Chris Taylor, and this week we are back with part three of the Leadership and Strategy Guide for Jocko Willink's Tactical Field Manual. And I'm excited again to tackle this book. It is a book that continues to teach me. Let's address this while we are, and for those watching, I am. It is Halloween, so I'm dressed up as Spider-Man. Just fun, a little bit of Halloween spirit, even in these strange times, which is quite fun in the mischievous night of Halloween. Let's dive in to part three, and we're looking at the inner tenets, the core tenets of Jocko's book this week. And we're starting off with be capable and ask for help, because we finished off last time with study, which is very different to the core tenets. There's a lot of repeated messages in this book, as you'll see and hear from the previous podcasts. And I like that repetition. It reminds you that there's these small sort of incremental steps that you're taking to learn about leadership. And this is a lot of this is theory, but it is giving some practical examples through Jocko's experience and through my own in lower level subordinate roles that I've seen how leadership can be done well just through personal experience, the minimal experiences you may think at the age of 25. Nonetheless, let's dive in. Let's go for it. So a leader must know and understand the job, skills and equipment used by the people below him or her in the chain of command. This isn't to say a leader needs to be an expert in everything. That is impossible. A platoon commander does not need to know as much about shooting as the snipers do. He can't understand the various radios as well as his radio man does. He will not know the details of routes and from a target like the point man will. This is just getting into motion the ideas that as a leader, you have to have some general idea of the concepts your subordinates and your employees are working with, or your teammates for that matter. It is important to understand these concepts, and I've got written down here, I think, as well, leaders must understand subordinate roles entail, but this often leads to people thinking that they'll look silly by asking a load of questions. And a really good example of this, if for those who've been to university or are currently in secondary school or anything along those lines, or have been to school in higher education or any sort of large auditorium where you're listening to someone lecture or even just a teacher, you'll find that it's dead quiet when someone says, "Does anyone have any questions?" And the same you'll find within the workplace when it comes down to either a lecture, a presentation, there'll be the one or two people, it's normally the same people every time who will put their hand up and ask questions, because they're not afraid normally to show that they don't know everything. It's one of those things these days that less and less people are willing to do is say, "I don't know." And I love those words because it means that there's a little bit of humility there. Anyway, back to the book. But in all these cases, the leader must at least be familiar with what goes on below him in the chain of command. What should a leader do if he doesn't know or understand a skill or a job that plays a role in the accomplishment of the mission? Simply ask. That's right, go and ask. And not just for an explanation, ask to learn and actually do. Sight in that sniper weapon, program that radio, lay some block, run the piece of equipment for a little while. Get familiar and let actual practice. Sorry, get familiar and then actually practice the task. There is a fear that you will look stupid. Resist this temptation to avoid a task when thinking it's stupid, or that you'll look silly. There's so many times where people don't do things. It's the worst thing in life is not doing the task, it's getting started with the task. The hardest part is the start. It's horrible when you think that you have a daunting task, but it's bit by bit. And as I've got older, I've started to realise that it's so much easier to divide things into smaller chunks. You have a big thing you need to do. You have to learn something new. You have to deal with something big in the job. It's like these small incremental steps that you take to get better and to understand something. What subordinates don't respect is a leader who tries to appear to know everything. I know this from experience. When I was a junior ranking SEAL, I was also impressed by a boss who would come and truly show interest in what we were doing on the front lines. I was even more impressed if they asked questions and wanted to really understand my perspective. Put your ego in check and ask for help. It's ego. Once again, we're seeing this over and over again. And later on in this chapter of Core Tenets, you'll see in one of the rules is that ego is a consistent thing you have to put aside. And it's the hardest thing. It's not a simple task. It's not something that everyone can just switch off. It's just not possible. Because we all, you know, we all care. No matter how psychopathic you may be, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how distant you are from people. You still care, just that little bit. It's hard to take that little bit and put it aside. But remember, being a leader who is not required to be able to perform tasks assigned to the front lines is no excuse for being ignorant or unprepared. So even though you want to learn this new task, be prepared for it. Do a little bit of research. Again, study. Bringing back to what we said in the previous podcast. Take the time. And you're going to see this again and again and again. One thing that I've got in my new job at the moment that I brought myself, because we're working from home now. This is a new society, new way, new normal. I brought myself a whiteboard. I'd bring the office to me, not bring me to the office. And at the moment, I'm loving it. I structure my day. That independence, that ability to have the day that you want. And if you don't get everything checked off on the list, it's fine. Because you've checked off something. Checking off one thing, even if it's as simple as reading 10 pages or writing down your thoughts, it's something. Get it done. So at the end of this lesson of being capable and asking for help, Jocko goes on to say, of course you can't spend all the time with the frontline troops, you have to have a balance. This is important again, is that you're not expected to know everything. Have a concept, have something. You can't always rely on your lead technical person of that specific subject, or because you'll constantly find that if there's a problem, you won't be able to solve it if they're not there. Have some sort of knowledge to be able to tackle these tasks. And you'll earn the respect of people around you by doing so. Earn the respect of people just by showing the ability to want to learn. It's easy for me to say, but in today's society, wanting to learn is more important than ever. With the current scenario of life, let's enjoy it. Let's learn to love to learn. And I remember when I was in secondary school, there's a lot of people who dislike the educational system. And that's because it's a broken system from what I see. And that learning isn't the problem. It's the system itself. How we tackle that as a solution, I'm not sure. I don't have a solution at the moment. And you may be thinking, well, why'd you bring it up in the first place? Because you have to understand that you shouldn't be put off learning just because of one experience. Learning is forever. There is no end to it. Building trust and relationships. Relationships up and down the chain of command are foundations of a team. If two people trust each other, they have a relationship. If there's no trust, there is no relationship. So relationships are built on trust. Teams are built on relationships. If there aren't any relationships between people, there is no team. Just a group of random people. We need to build relationships to form a team. We need to build trust to build relationships. So the question is, how can we build trust, relationships, and in the end, our team? Well, the first thing he puts there, honesty. Trust. Ability to tell the truth. It's something that a lot of people, you might think that's so simplistic, tell the truth, or at least don't lie, or be honest, or something along those lines, but in today's society, where it's easy to get by just saying yes to everything, and being the yes man that you'll get done, and what will happen is you'll overwork yourself in that scenario. But also, where, you know, there's that saying, isn't it? Fake it till you make it. It's horrible. It's because you're willing to do anything to get there. It's not necessarily a good thing, is it? Because in the end, in the long run, people won't trust you because you're willing to say anything. I know this. For me personally, because I like to tell stories, something as a youngster, I used to love to tell stories of holidays, stuff like that, and you'd add little sprinklings of information that weren't necessarily true, and you would add these to make the story seem even more grand than it already was. I'd love to know if you've had this as well. So it's just have a think to yourself when you were younger. Have you told stories that weren't, you know, the foundation was true, but the rest of it, some of it was false. And as you got to a teenager, you started to tell the story, but there would be more and more sprinklings of falsehood because you had to, you had this environment at school where you would tell who had the greater story to tell. I think that's a very human thing, is obviously hierarchy, but also wanting to tell a story that everybody listens to. It's like that original campfire of humans where, you know, you had the storyteller and everyone would listen. We'll get back onto listening later. I think that's a really important topic as well. But again, building trust, be honest. And the hardest thing is to tell the foundational truth without sprinkling those falsehoods. But don't just tell the truth. Give truth. Give trust. So if you want to get trust from your subordinates or your teammates, you have to give trust. What does this mean? Well, if I want my subordinates to trust me, I need to give them trust. So for instance, I will allow and trust them to run a mission. Again, very sort of military type term. But the meaning is that in a job, your boss will give you some sort of task to do. They will trust you to do that task independently. The ability to trust you to do it is so important. And without oversight, this right here, it says, I will allow and trust them to work through a problem without my oversight. Micromanagement is the enemy of getting stuff done. Micromanagement, and this is the inability to trust others to do something. You may see this in examples with Gordon Ramsay in the kitchen. He'll get so angry with somebody, they'll have lost their trust, his trust, because they haven't been able to perform their task, the task that he's assigned them. And we're going to go into this now, is that with good subordinates and teammates, leaders will be able to have small incremental steps. Again, that phrase coming up again. Where we'll have smaller and bigger bits of responsibility added to this person. And you may be thinking to yourself, well, what if I fail, Chris? And I can tell you now that the first task won't be a almighty important task. You will have something that you can achieve. Your boss is giving you in really important real life scenario tasks that are, let's say, gonna hit a deadline in a week's time, and it's gonna impact the company, or it's gonna impact your team, or something along those lines. That boss is setting you up to fail, so watch out for that. We're talking about bad leaders there. We want to talk about good leaders. So I would give them a problem to solve where the failure to solve the problem would result in a broader catastrophe. I wouldn't highlight there. Sorry, said that wrong. Instead, I would give the subordinate a problem that would be easy to recover from should a solution not be found in a timely manner. In each case, if my subordinate were successful, my trust would increase. Also, since I gave the subordinate leeway to make the decision, their trust in me would increase. Again. And if they fail, Jocko goes on to say, I'd look at their mistake as an opportunity to teach them, to console them, to mentor them. This is what we should be looking for, mentors. There's so much to learn in this society and so few people willing to take a chance on the youth of today. It's very difficult in a capitalist society. Not saying that's bad, I'm saying the competitiveness of society causes this. And that's something you can't get away from. You have to learn. You have to get something. I would give them a little bit more guidance and oversight this time to make sure they did a better job. Once they were successful, I'd follow the same procedure above, gradually increasing the size and magnitude of the mission, decision, or problem, continuing to increase the trust between us. As time goes on, the mission, decision and problems become more difficult, and the subordinate will make mistakes. Again, these are simply learning opportunities that can make the subordinate better. Again, really good word here, little adjustments. Not big. We're not taking huge steps. We're going to build people up. Build people up real slow until they become what I like to call the hero along the line. The hero today, because everyone's a hero in their own world. And they need to earn that. And I think everyone does, including myself. I'm constantly learning to be able to be a better person. I mean, for God's sake, I'm wearing a hero costume right now. But it's those stories. Again, we go back and we think about it and we think to ourselves, like, I want to be a better person so that I can feel that pride in myself. The more trust that is built, the more hands-off the leader can be. Eventually, the subordinate will be successfully carried off enough missions, decisions and problem-solving and learned enough along the way that full trust is achieved. That's the ideal goal. You and your boss, you have a connection, you have that relationship. For me, one of my favourite bosses of all time, we were friends. Not only could he trust me to get the job done, he knew it was going to get done. And he knew that I was going to try my best to get it done. And where I didn't know something, I'd go to him to ask to get something done. And the same would come to me. If he didn't know something, come to me. And that was why I valued him so much. Because I started to realise that he didn't know everything, and neither did I. And that was okay. And we'd have meetings, regular meetings, where we'd go over stuff together. And we both learned something from the meeting. That. And I've got a current boss. He admits daily to me, like, he doesn't know certain stuff, and that as I crack these problems, that he's learning with me. It's amazing. In other industries, I don't think this would be possible, and I think it's because certainly in my case, there's not high priority and high time constraints at the moment, but there could be, and there will be in the future. So being prepared for that is important. So this is up the chain of command. I can't give any life examples from myself because I've never been somebody who has had the gall to provide. Maybe I've just described it. I'm just thinking. Sorry, I'm having a conversation with myself here where I'm having an internal battle at the same time. Up the chain of command. I just described an up the chain of command relationship without realizing it. Here we go. We also have to develop trust between relationships with our superiors. Once again, the process starts with telling the truth. The mistake that often gets made here is that subordinates will like to tell their boss what they think their boss would want to hear. Ah, man, that's so true. So true. It's so hard to be able to tell them that maybe they're not doing the best possible. And not the best possible way around it, the not best possible solution, but maybe thinking about, let's say, finding a solution that you can both agree on. That's really important. It's very easy to just say, yeah, your solution's right, there's no other solution, let's do it. And Jock has got it written here, if you become a yes person, you just say, you don't tell them the truth, and you just continue to allow them to go down this route. It will come back and hurt the boss in the long term. The boss will remember it and that they'll be fed incorrect information and their trust in you will obviously be diminished. But he's also got here in the chapter, tell your boss important pieces of information. And again, is worth telling your boss. Really important there. I worked with somebody who would consistently go to our manager and tell them all the things that were wrong. No solutions, just tell them everything that was wrong. Just consistently, day in, day out. This is wrong, this is wrong. No solutions, just continue to do it. And by the end of it, you could just see my boss just gave up and just didn't bother assigning him any high priority tasks. He just sort of dug his own grave. And again, what Jocko's got written down here, make sure you distinguish between telling the truth about things the boss needs to know and complaining about every little thing that goes on. All these strategies must be employed to build trust. Without trust, leadership falls apart. It's very true. And as I said there, sometimes it can impact negatively. Trust and decentralized command. We've got a nice little trust theme going on here. One of the most critical requirements for trust is the use of decentralized command. Trust must be well established because there are times when the only thing holding a team together up and down the chain of command is trust. There are dynamic situations when there is not time for a leader to explain why he or she needs the job done. Instead, the leader needs the subordinate to execute immediately. Again, we've talked about in previous podcasts explaining things to people, why you need to get them done. And Jocko's highlighting here, sometimes it's not possible to get that done. And he's highlighted here that there are in high priority, high time constrained tasks, sometimes you just need to bang, get it done. Yes, so more important, why they need to do it is really important. And once they understand why they're doing what they are doing and they take ownership and carry out the task with the knowledge and clarity to make adjustments as needed. Decentralized command doesn't work without why. So when you provide your subordinates with tasks that they'll do that you were assigned, that you are going to give them to do, and it's, you know, that sort of lowering down and allowing them to become the leaders of that task, you have to explain why it's getting done. Otherwise, it isn't their task, it's still yours. On top of that, I also always encourage questions from subordinates. If they don't understand why they're doing something, they need to ask. If subordinates disagree with a plan or idea, they need to raise their concern up the chain of command. This kind of resistance to and pushback against the boss will create a better result in the end. And it also gives your boss a bigger perspective as well. Sometimes they can be out of touch with the frontline troops. Sometimes they can be out of touch with, let's say, the store manager doesn't understand why the clerks are getting frustrated with certain customer experiences. And it may be because they haven't been at the till for a while, or they haven't spoken to customers lately. And the system that the clerks have been given doesn't technically work. Different perspectives can be seen up and down the chain of command. With open dialogue, the best possible plan can be formulated. And Jocko goes on to talk about a rather large example of that pushing up and down the chain of command with different scenarios, with a character he calls Fred. And he goes on to basically formulate that there's a scenario where he says to Fred, I need you to do this task and we don't have time to explain. And Fred says, roger that, get it done, bang. There's another example where he goes on to say negative, and Fred will then feed to Jocko, ha, this is a better solution, let's do it this way. And it goes back and forth, and then Jocko responds with, along the lines of, execute. So he's able to execute and we were able to execute. Not only because decentralized command and his understanding of why, but also because of the relationship we built through trust up and down the chain of command. That is leadership. It's really important to show that ability to say, maybe I don't know whether this is the best solution for the task we're looking at right now. So moving on, we're now looking at earning influence and respect. And again, it's very similar to that trust environment. Trust and ability to show respect to your... they're one and the same. The thing is, trust and honesty are one and the same in my mind. But maybe they're not. I'd be intrigued to look at this up later on. Just as a leader must build trust and relationships up and down the chain of command, a leader must also earn influence and respect. Too often, leaders think they deserve to be respected because of their rank of experience. It's so funny when you're younger, you think that if you become a boss that you automatically gain the respect of everyone around you. It's just not true. Similarly, they think that their position of authority equates to influence and that they are right to an extent. When a leader is in a position of senior rank, there is some respect and influence that is inherited in that rank. Generally, a subordinate looks to a superior and expects that their superior's training and experience will give the superior the ability to make good decisions. and lead the team in the right direction. Rank and position do carry some level of respect and influence. And again, Jocko goes on to say, in order to gain influence, you have to give influence. And in order to gain respect, you have to give respect. And so, when you're giving them influence, you have to, and respect, you have to actually listen to their opinion. And it says, as I said earlier, the listening part of a relationship is really important. You'll see in these podcasts, sometimes I'm dead quiet. When I'm listening to somebody, sometimes if they're saying something extremely important, you won't even hear me breathing. Because I'm locked in. I'm focused. I'm there. I'm in their speech. And I'm trying to absorb everything they're going to say. Because I'm not just trying to create a rebuttal. And that's not how it should be. It should be trying to understand what they're saying. And you'll hear me at the moment taking pauses, thinking it through, breaking it down. Because in order to truly get respect from people and give respect to people, you have to have the ability to listen. And that's a real difficulty. It's not easy listening to others. Because you immediately your mind's whirling at 100, you know, whirling through the things they're saying and thinking of, oh, maybe I don't agree with that, maybe I do agree with that. It's a difficult scenario. The more you respect people and allow people to influence you, the more respect you will gain and the more influence you will have over them. Although that's like a really short little sort of couple of paragraphs, earning influence from respect, it's really important because I think the listening part and understanding someone else's perspective through opinions, I think that's what's missing in society at the moment. You'll see on the news there's a lot of people saying that there's a divide. I think in real life, if you ignore the news and if you ignore social media, if you talk to people, you're more than likely to see maybe some different opinions, but people are much more likely to be reserved in real life and a little bit more willing to have a conversation. Maybe that might just be me, and maybe I'm seeing a very specific perspective, and maybe that's my thing to go away and find some new ways of opening that perspective up. But it's interesting, to say the least. Here's a really important one. We've talked about decentralized command. Here's the second concept that should be really absorbed. Extreme ownership of everything. One of the most important tenets of leadership I adhere to as a leader in my military career was the idea of extreme ownership. The idea of extreme ownership has struck a chord with people. It's been incredibly effective in helping those in all kinds of leadership positions, leading all kinds of teams in all kinds of industries, businesses and professions. What is extreme ownership, you may be thinking? Well, extreme ownership is, what it really means is that a leader is responsible for everything, absolutely everything. How can the leader be at fault for everything, you may be thinking to yourself? Well, there's very few things that the leader can't not control. And I know, double negative, you may be thinking, oh. But the point is that Jocko's goes on with a example of a machine gunner. I don't think that example truly gets it across to people outside of the military, so I'm going to give you another one. Is that this leader, even though the subordinate, it's their job to get something done. It's their job to do a task. If the subordinate fails to do that task, and they fail to do it within a certain standard, it's the leader's fault because they haven't explained how to do it properly, or they haven't trained them. It's a good example at the moment is the police in America. The lack of training is causing, also, not just the lack of training, the lack of prestige within the police is causing them to be ill-prepared and just untrained to be able to tackle the sort of tasks that are currently in society, and it's scary. It's scary to see it, but you know, the news always, again, I'm seeing it from across the pond. In reality, it could be completely different, and the news are blowing out well out of proportion. Who knows? Back to the book. Taking extreme ownership means that leaders are responsible for every action that people are on their team make. It is as simple as that. There are some things that occur that are beyond the control of the leader, but they are far fewer than most people think. One great example of this is the weather. Everyone knows that we can't control the weather, so if a mission was cancelled because the weather is too bad for the helicopters to fly in, the assault team to target, the obviously can't be the leader's fault. After all, the leader can't control the weather. Wrong. While the leader can't control the weather, he can certainly put a contingency plan in place in case there is bad weather. There could have been a backup plan, using ground vehicles to get the target. The leader could have forward-staged closer to the target as helicopters weren't required. He could have even come up with a contingency timeline that kept all the assets available if the weather turned bad so the mission could be delayed rather than cancelled. This means that there are no buts to take extreme ownership. It applies to everything, and the moment a leader decides he's going to allow excuses, it opens up the door to shift blame onto others. That leads to failures. There's nothing to add there. It's self-explanatory. There are no buts. Get it done. Preemptive ownership. This is my favourite. Out of some of the core tenets that I've read within this book, this is my favourite core tenet. Preemptive ownership. And this is because I'm a structured person. I love my whiteboard. I love my tasks. I love being able to write out the stuff that I've done throughout the day to show people and to sort of tick it off. I'm a goal-orientated person. It's just who I am. And preemptive ownership is what I like to just say is just ownership of planning. When a leader knows they cannot blame anyone or anything else, they'll implement what I call preemptive ownership. They will take ownership of things to prevent problems from unfolding in the first place. The leader who knows he can't blame his machine gunner when the machine gunner makes a mistake is going to take preemptive ownership and focus on training. Again, training, important. And understand, get the machine gunner to ensuring he understands the plan and take part. The leader layers contingency plans in events of bad weather. There are no excuses. Preemptively making plans before mistakes can occur. So don't just take extreme ownership after the fact. Take preemptive ownership to mitigate problems before they even happen. Boom. I love that. I really do. I think that, you know, you'll find that in some times in your life, you won't have any problems because you're planning ahead. If you plan ahead, you can foresee problems and you can tackle them before they even happen. And sometimes you may say to me, Chris, well, maybe if you're doing all this planning, you're not actually getting any work done. Well, to an extent, maybe, but those hours that you spend planning will stop issues from occurring when you're working. So if you have a moment where you can't figure something out within the work and the automatic thing to do is to go to somebody higher up to help you fix that problem, if you've already thought it through and thought of a solution beforehand, you don't need to bother that superior and therefore, you know, show them that you don't have the ability to deal with this task that they've assigned you. I love it. Preemptive ownership. Fantastic. Taking ownership when being blamed. People often ask me, Jocko in this scenario, how do I take ownership when other people are blaming me and saying things are my fault? To me, the answer is blatantly obvious. I tell them, that's the whole point. When your team blames you, you say, yes, everything is my fault. I'm the leader and I am responsible for everything that happens, the good and the bad. And yes, this is my fault. And here is what I'm going to do to fix it. Exactly. Don't just say it's your fault, because if you just say that, they'll just be like, right, yes, it's your fault, and that offers your boss the ability to go, well, you can do anything about that. And if you just say, yes, it's my fault, well, you know, there's no solution to that. There's no solution to the problem. And so you have to think to yourself, well, you know, you're fired, because I'll get yes man over here to give me a solution that may not fix the problem, but he'll do the task. So then I tell them to shift immediately to proactive problem solving and explain their solution. Or if they don't have a solution, say they're trying to figure one out. Because just by saying, you know, taking extreme ownership doesn't do anything. The answer. Simply taking ownership is obvious, but it can be a hard one to figure out. It is a hard thing to do, once again, because our egos. It hurts our egos. When we accept the blame and take ownership of it, some people can't get over that hurdle. But it hurts even more than someone else is pointing the finger at us, assigning us the blame. For whatever the problem is, and when someone points the finger at us and blames us for the problem, what do? We get defensive. We all get defensive. You know you have a point in your head right now where you're thinking to yourself, yeah, I really got defensive that time. I made a fool out of myself by getting defensive and getting angry and showing people that I felt real pain when being pointing this out. Because you know when someone gets angry, and this is something that people bully, they'll bully other people because they like to see that anger, because they know it's the truth. When somebody says something truthful, it's a lot harder to dismiss than something that is a lie. As soon as you finish that statement, the fire team... So, yeah, perfect. That's what I need. So, Jocko goes on to give an explanation here of talking about a fire team leader who sees his subordinate say, I don't know, I didn't do this right, this is what I'm going to do to fix the problem. And the fire team leader says, perfect, that's what I need. I need you to step up and lead. I can't be everywhere all the time. Thanks for helping me out. In this scenario, the subordinate says, right, I realise my boss can't do this, so therefore I need to do this, and I need to step up and get it done. And to throw one more perspective into this, what about the fire team leader? Who does he want on his team? The rifleman who evades blame and shirks responsibility, or the one who takes ownership of mistakes, even those made by someone else in the fire team? The answer is obvious. Any leader wants people on his or her team that step up, take ownership. So be one of those people. It's real hard to not want to shirk some responsibility sometimes. And this is a fun... Yeah, I love doing this podcast. I love sort of having a laugh with friends and sometimes... But we've got a little... Sometimes we can be serious. Sometimes we want to make ourselves better. And that's a serious task, and it's not easy. It's not easy to look at yourself and be like, I've got flaws and I have to tackle those flaws. And it's even harder when you have to do it in front of other people, when they're blaming you or when your boss wants you to take ownership of the problem. It's daunting. It's a task that you may think that you can't get done, but you have to try and get it done anyway. And it's scary, to say the least. Okay, so we are into a really important tenet here that I think is going to end the podcast here. It's a fantastic little tenet. It's called picking up the brass. Leaders might be above their subordinates in rank structure. They are not actually superior to those below them in the chain of command. This means leaders must respect them. It also means that there's no job too small or menial for a leader to do. In the SEAL teams, we shoot a lot of weapons on the vast, highly dynamic ranges that cover dozens of small miles of land. When we shoot, the weapons leave behind brass shells, casings by the hundreds of thousands, if not millions. Because brass has value and can be recycled, because the training ranges must be kept clean, when a SEAL platoon finishes a block of training, it then has to pick up all those brass casings. This is a pretty miserable task and usually takes a couple of days of gutting through high temperatures in the desert heat and crawling around on your knees picking up shell casings. It is a menial task that requires zero skill and leadership whatsoever. What do you think Jock is going to say here? Do you think he's above this task? He's not. He goes on to say that he would do these jobs and that no job was above him and that he'd get these zero skill jobs done. And that by doing so, he would create those relationships with his subordinates, because he'd build bonds by doing these zero-skilled tasks, and he'll gain greater perspective of his team, because he'd also see those who were slacking, those who weren't joining him as or getting the job done within these menial tasks like everyone else, and you'd be able to identify those people. Because if he said he was stepping back and didn't do these tasks, he wouldn't be able to gain that perspective, and he wouldn't identify each team member personally. He then goes on to say, good leaders will be the hard things their subordinates do every day, so they never forget to respect the job itself and the people who do the job. And also so the troops recognise the leader's willingness to shoulder some of the burden, so he or she can understand the true challenges of the job. I love that. There's nothing too below you. There's nothing. Taking out the trash, doing the dishwasher, doing the dishes, doing the anything dirty, anything that is just physically, just you do it. I remember when I was a dishwasher for a while, for a medium time, I'll never forget it. It's one of those dirty tasks that you have to do, you get paid to do it, it's crap. You know, you do it at a young age, you're in your teens and you just do it. And I remember thinking to myself, well, this isn't fun, I don't want to be doing this for a long time. But nonetheless, it taught me a lot, because it taught me that there's some sort of responsibility provided to me, even if it is to this menial task, and I get rewarded for it. And so it is truly important to take those parts of your life and remind yourself that, yeah, even though I've got better in life, I still do the dishes, I still wash up by hand, and I still get the job done. And as you get better, you do build up this ego, and so it becomes a lot easier, I think, for people to shatter their ego by pointing out small flaws in it. And I think that the more senior you get, that doesn't mean you stop doing these tasks. And I love this tenet in Jocko's book here, in the Leadership and Strategy Guide. And I think it's a great place to stop within the podcast. This has been a nice short one. We're going to do another few parts, because as you can see, we're only halfway through. There is a lot more to cover within this book. There are so many lessons to be learned, so much teaching to be given from this guide, from the Leadership Strategy and Tactics Field Manual. This has been a Taylor's Tales podcast. This has been Chris's Corner. I'm your host, Chris Taylor. And this has been part four, how crazy, Leadership Strategy and Tactics Field Manual by Jocko Willink, and I really hope to see you next time. Till then, peace out, and enjoy your Halloween!